and fouler things than orcs in the deep places of the world. He did not speak aloud his thought that whatever it was that dwelt in the lake, it had seized on Frodo first among all the company. Boromir muttered under his breath, but the echoing stone magnified the sound to a hoarse whisper that all could hear. "In the deep places of the world, and thither we are going against my wish. Who will lead us now in this deadly dark?" "I will," said Gandalf. "And Gimli shall walk with me. Follow my staff." As the wizard passed on ahead and up the great steps, he held his staff aloft, and from its tip there came a faint radiance. The wide stairway was sound and undamaged. 200 steps they counted, broad and shallow, and at the top they found an arched passage with a level floor leading on into the dark.
"Let us sit and rest and have something to eat here on the landing, since we can't find a dining room," said Frodo. He had begun to shake off the terror of the clutching arm, and suddenly he felt extremely hungry. The proposal was welcomed by all, and they sat down on the upper steps, dim figures in the gloom. After they had eaten, Gandalf gave them each a third sip of the Mirovor of Rivendell.
"It will not last much longer, I'm afraid," he said. "But I think we need it after that horror at the gate. And unless we have great luck, we shall need all that is left before we see the other side. Go carefully with the water, too. There are many streams and wells in the mines, but they should not be touched. We may not have a chance of filling our skins and bottles till we come down into Dimrill Dale."
"How long is that going to take us?" asked Frodo.
"I cannot say," answered Gandalf. "It depends on many chances. But going straight, without mishap or losing our way, we shall take 3 or 4 marches, I expect. It cannot be less than 40 miles from West Door to East Gate in a direct line, and the road may wind much." After only a brief rest, they started on their way again. All were eager to get the journey over as quickly as possible, and were willing, tired as they were, to go on marching still for several hours. Gandalf walked in front as before. In his left hand he held up his glimmering staff, the light of which just showed the ground before his feet. In his right he held his sword Glamdring. Behind him came Gimli, his eyes glinting in the dim light as he turned his head from side to side. Behind the dwarf walked Frodo, and he had drawn the short sword Sting. No gleam came from the blades of Sting or of Glamdring, and that was some comfort, for being the work of elvish smiths in the elder days, these swords shone with a cold light if any orc were near at hand. Behind Frodo went Sam, and after him Legolas, and the young hobbits, and Boromir. In the dark at the rear, grim and silent, walked Aragorn. The passage twisted round a few turns, and then began to descend. It went steadily down for a long while before it became level once again. The air grew hot and stifling, but it was not foul, and at times they felt currents of cooler air upon their faces, issuing from half-guessed openings in the walls. There were many of these. In the pale ray of the wizard's staff, Frodo caught glimpses of stairs and arches, and of other passages and tunnels sloping up, or running steeply down, or opening blankly dark on either side. It was bewildering beyond hope of remembering. Gimli aided Gandalf very little, except by his stout courage. At least he was not, as were most of the others, troubled by the mere darkness in itself. Often the wizard consulted him at points where the choice of way was doubtful. But it was always Gandalf who had the final word. The mines of Moria were vast and intricate beyond the imagination of Gimli, Glóin's son, dwarf of the mountain race though he was. To Gandalf the far-off memories of a journey long before were now of little help. But even in the gloom, and despite all windings of the road, he knew whither he wished to go, and he did not falter, as long as there was a path that led towards his goal.
"Don't be afraid,"
said Aragorn. There was a pause longer than usual, and Gandalf and Gimli were whispering together. The others were crowded behind, waiting anxiously. "Don't be afraid. I've been with him on many a journey, if never on one so dark. And there are tales of Rivendell of greater deeds of his than any that I have seen. He will not go astray, if there is any path to find. He has led us in here against our fears, but he'll lead us out again, at whatever cost to himself. He's surer of finding the way home in a blind night than the cats of Queen Baruthiel." It was well for the company that they had such a guide. They had no fuel nor any means of making torches. In the desperate scramble at the doors, many things had been left behind, but without any light they would soon have come to grief. There were not only many roads to choose from, there were also in many places holes and pitfalls, and dark wells beside the path in which their passing feet echoed. There were fissures and chasms in the walls and floors, and every now and then a crack would open right before their feet. The widest was more than 7 feet across, and it was long before Pippin could summon enough courage to leap over the dreadful gap. The noise of churning water came up from far below, as if some great mill-wheel was turning in the depths. "Rope," muttered Sam. "I knew I'd want it if I hadn't got it." As these dangers became more frequent, their march became slower. Already they seemed to have been tramping on, endlessly to the mountain's roots. They were more than weary, and yet there seemed no comfort in the thought of halting anywhere. Frodo's spirits had risen for a while after his escape, and after food and a draught of the cordial, but now a deep uneasiness, growing to dread, crept over him again. Though he had been healed in Rivendell of the knife-stroke, that grim wound had not been without effect. His senses were sharper, and more aware of things that could not be seen. One sign of change that he soon had noticed was that he could see more in the dark than any of his companions, save perhaps Gandalf. And he was in any case the bearer of the ring. It hung upon its chain against his breast, and at whiles it seemed a heavy weight. He felt the certainty of evil ahead and of evil following, but he said nothing. He gripped tighter on the hilt of his sword and went on doggedly. The company behind him spoke seldom, and then only in hurried whispers. There was no sound but the sound of their own feet. The dull stamp of Gimli's dwarf boots, the heavy tread of Boromir, the light step of Legolas, the soft, scarce-heard patter of hobbit feet, and in the rear the slow, firm footfalls of Aragorn with his long stride. When they halted for a moment they heard nothing at all, unless it were occasionally a faint trickle and a drip of unseen water. Yet Frodo began to hear, or to imagine that he heard, something else, like the faint fall of soft, bare feet. It was never loud enough, or near enough, for him to feel certain that he heard it, but once it had started it never stopped, while the company was moving. But it was not an echo, for when they halted it pattered on for a little while all by itself, and then grew still. It was after nightfall when they had entered the mines. They had been going for several hours with only brief halts, when Gandalf came to his first serious check. Before him stood a wide, dark arch opening into three passages. All led in the same general direction, eastwards. But the left-hand passage plunged down, while the right-hand climbed up, and the middle way seemed to run on, smooth and level but very narrow.
"I have no memory of this place at all," said Gandalf, standing uncertainly under the arch.
He held up his staff in the hope of finding some marks or inscription that might help his choice, but nothing of the kind was to be seen. "I'm too weary to decide," he said, shaking his head, "and I expect that you are all as weary as I am, or wearier. We'd better halt here for what is left of the night. You know what I mean. In here it's ever dark, but outside the late moon is riding westward, and the middle night has passed."
"Poor old Bill," said Sam. "I wonder where he is. I hope those wolves haven't got him yet."
To the left of the great arch they found a stone door. It was half closed, but swung back easily to a gentle thrust. Beyond there seemed to lie a wide chamber cut in the rock.
"Steady, steady," cried Gandalf as Merry and Pippin pushed forward, glad to find a place where they could rest with at least more feeling of shelter than in the open passage. "Steady. You do not know what is inside yet. I'll go first."
He went in cautiously, and the others filed behind.
"There," he said, pointing with his staff to the middle of the floor. Before his feet they saw a large round hole like the mouth of a well. Broken and rusty chains lay at the edge, and trailed down into the black pit. Fragments of stone lay near.
"One of you might have fallen in and still be wondering when you were going to strike the bottom," said Aragorn to Merry. "Let the guide go first while you have one."
"This seems to have been a guard room made for the watching of the three passages," said Gimli. "That hole was plainly a well for the guard's use, covered with a stone lid. But the lid is broken, and we must all take care in the dark."
Pippin felt curiously attracted by the well. While the others were unrolling blankets and making beds against the walls of the chamber, as far as possible from the hole in the floor, he crept to the edge and peered over. A chill air seemed to strike his face, rising from invisible depths. Moved by a sudden impulse, he groped for a loose stone and let it drop. He felt his heart beat many times before there was any sound. Then far below, as if the stone had fallen into deep water in some cavernous place, there came a plunk, very distant, but magnified and repeated in the hollow shaft.
"What's that?" cried Gandalf.
He was relieved when Pippin confessed what he had done, but he was angry, and Pippin could see his eyes glinting.
"Fool of a Took!" he growled. "This is a serious journey, not a hobbit walking party. Throw yourself in next time, and then you'll be no further nuisance. Now be quiet."
Nothing more was heard for several minutes, but then there came out of the depths faint knocks. Tom-tap, tap-tom. They stopped, and when the echoes had died away, they were repeated. Tap-tom, tom-tap, tap-tap, tom. They sounded disquietingly, like signals of some sort, but after a while the knocking died away and was not heard again.
"That was the sound of a hammer, or I've never heard one," said Gimli.
"Yes," said Gandalf, "and I don't like it. It may have nothing to do with Peregrine's foolish stone, but probably something has been disturbed that would have been better left quiet. Pray, do nothing of the kind again. Let us hope we shall get some rest without further trouble. You, Pippin, can go on the first watch as a reward," he growled, as he rolled himself in a blanket. Pippin sat miserably by the door in the pitch dark, but he kept on turning round, fearing that some unknown thing would crawl up out of the well. He wished he could cover the hole, if only with a blanket, but he dared not move or go near it, even though Gandalf seemed to be asleep. Actually, Gandalf was awake, though lying still and silent. He was deep in thought, trying to recall every memory of his former journey in the mines, and considering anxiously the next course that he should take. A false turn now might be disastrous. After an hour, he rose up and came over to Pippin.
"Get into a corner and have a sleep, my lad," he said in a kinder tone. "You want to sleep, I expect. I can't get a wink, so I may as well do the watching." "I know what is the matter with me," he muttered, as he sat down by the door. "I need smoke. I've not tasted it since the morning before the snowstorm."
The last thing that Pippin saw, as sleep took him, was a dark glimpse of the old wizard huddled on the floor, shielding a growing chip in his gnarled hands between his knees. The flicker for a moment showed his sharp nose and the puff of smoke.
It was Gandalf who roused them all from sleep. He had sat and watched all alone for about 6 hours, and had let the others rest.
"And in the watches I've made up my mind," he said. "I don't like the feel of the middle way, and I don't like the smell of the left-hand way. There's foul air down there, or I'm no guide. I shall take the right-hand passage. It's time we began to climb up again." For 8 dark hours, not counting 2 brief halts, they marched on, and they met no danger, and heard nothing, and saw nothing but the faint gleam of the wizard's light, bobbing like a will-o'-the-wisp in front of them. The passage they had chosen wound steadily upwards. As far as they could judge, it went in great mounting curves, and as it rose it grew loftier and wider. There were now no openings to other galleries or tunnels on either side, and the floor was level and sound, without pits or cracks. Evidently they had struck what once had been an important road, and they went forward quicker than they had done on their first march. In this way they advanced some 15 miles, measured in a direct line east, though they must have actually walked 20 miles or more. As the road climbed upwards, Frodo's spirits rose a little, but he still felt oppressed, and still at times he heard, or thought he heard, away behind the company and beyond the fall and patter of their feet, a following footstep that was not an echo. They had marched as far as the hobbits could endure without a rest, and all were thinking of a place where they could sleep, when suddenly the walls to right and left vanished. They seemed to have passed through some arched doorway into a black and empty space. There was a great draught of warmer air behind them, and before them the darkness was cold on their faces. They halted and crowded together anxiously. Gandalf seemed pleased. "I chose the right way," he said. "At last we're coming to the habitable parts, and I guess that we are not far now from the eastern gate. But we're high up, a good deal higher than the Dimrill gate, unless I'm mistaken. From the feeling of the air we must be in a wide hall. I will now risk a little real light." He raised his staff, and for a brief instant there was a blaze like a flash of lightning. Great shadows sprang up and fled, and for a second they saw a vast roof far above their heads upheld by many mighty pillars hewn of stone. Before them, and on either side, stretched a huge empty hall. Its black walls, polished and smooth as glass, flashed and glittered. 3 other entrances they saw, dark black arches, one straight before them eastwards, and one on either side. Then the light went out.
"This is all that I shall venture on for the present," said Gandalf. "There used to be great windows on the mountainside, and shafts leading out to the light in the upper reaches of the mines. I think we've reached them now, but it's night outside again, and we can't tell until morning. If I'm right, tomorrow we may actually see the morning peeping in. But in the meanwhile we'd better go no further. Let us rest if we can. Things have gone well so far, and the greater part of the dark road is over. But we're not yet through, and it's a long way down to the gates that open on the world." The company spent that night in the great cavernous hall, huddled close together in a corner to escape the draught. There seemed to be a steady inflow of chill air through the eastern archway. All about them as they lay hung the darkness, hollow and immense, and they were oppressed by the loneliness and vastness of the dolven halls and endlessly branching stairs and passages. The wildest imaginings that dark rumour had ever suggested to the hobbits fell altogether short of the actual dread and wonder of Moria.
"There must have been a mighty crowd of dwarves here at one time," said Sam. "And every one of them busier than badgers for 500 years to make all this, and most in hard rock, too. What did they do it all for? They didn't live in these darksome holes, surely."
"These are not holes," said Gimli. "This is the great realm and city of the Dwaradelph. And of old it was not darksome, but full of light and splendour, as is still remembered in our songs." He rose, and standing in the dark, he began to chant in a deep voice, while the echoes ran away into the roof. "The world was young, the mountains green, no stain yet on the moon was seen, no words were laid on stream or stone, when Durin woke and walked alone. He named the nameless hills and dells, he drank from yet untasted wells, he stooped and looked in mirror, and saw a crown of stars appear, as gems upon a silver thread, above the shadow of his head. The world was fair, the mountains tall, in elder days before the fall of mighty kings in Nargothrond and Gondolin, who now beyond the western seas have passed away. The world was fair in Durin's day. A king he was on carven throne, in many pillared halls of stone, with golden roof and silver floor, and runes of power upon the door. The light of sun and star and moon, in shining lamps of crystal hewn, undimmed by cloud or shade of night, there shone for ever fair and bright. Their hammer on the anvil smote, their chisel clove, and graver wrote, there forged was blade, and bound was hilt, the delver mined, the mason built, their beryl, pearl and opal pale, and metal wrought like fisher's mail, buckler and corslet, axe and sword, and shining spears were laid in hoard. Unwearied then were Durin's folk, beneath the mountain's music woke, the harpers harped, the minstrels sang, and at the gates the trumpets rang. The world is grey, the mountains old, the forge's fire is ashen cold, no harp is rung, no hammer falls, the darkness dwells in Durin's halls, the shadows lie upon his tomb in Moria, in Khazad Dûm, but still the sunken stars appear in dark and windless Middlemere, there lies his crown in water deep, till Durin wakes again from sleep.
I like that, said Sam. I should like to learn it.
In Moria, in Khazad Dûm.
But it makes the darkness seem heavier, thinking of all those lamps. Are there piles of jewels and gold lying about there still? Gimli was silent. Having sung his song, he would not say more.
Piles of jewels? Said Gandalf.
No, the orcs have often plundered Moria. There's nothing left in the upper halls, and since the dwarves fled, no one dares to seek the shafts and treasures down in the deep places. They're drowned in water, or in a shadow of fear.
Then what do the dwarves want to come back for? Asked Sam.
For Mithril, answered Gandalf. The wealth of Moria was not in gold and jewels, the toys of the dwarves, nor in iron, their servant. Such things they found here, it is true, especially iron. But they did not need to delve for them. All things that they desired they could obtain in traffic. For here alone in the world was found Moria silver, or true silver, as some have called it. Mithril is the elvish name. The dwarves have a name which they do not tell. Its worth was 10 times that of gold, and now it's beyond price, for little is left above ground, and even the orcs dare not delve here for it. The lodes lead away north towards Carathras, and down to darkness. The dwarves tell no tale, but even as Mithril was the foundation of their wealth, so also it was their destruction. They delved too greedily and too deep, and disturbed that from which they fled. Durin's bane, of what they brought to light, the orcs have gathered nearly all, and given it in tribute to Sauron, who covets it. Mithril, all folk desired it. It could be beaten like copper, and polished like glass, and the dwarves could make of it a metal light and yet harder than tempered steel. Its beauty was like to that of common silver, but the beauty of Mithril did not tarnish or grow dim. The elves dearly loved it,
and among many uses they made of it, Ithildin, Star Moon, which you saw upon the doors. Bilbo had a corset of mithril rings that Thorin gave him. I wonder what has become of it. Gathering dust still in Mickle Delving Martham House, I suppose.
What? Cried Gimli, startled out of his silence. A corslet of Moria silver? That was a kingly gift.
Yes, said Gandalf. I never told him, but its worth was greater than the value of the whole shire and everything in it. Frodo said nothing, but he put his hand under his tunic and touched the rings of his mail shirt. He felt staggered to think that he had been walking about with the price of the shire under his jacket. Had Bilbo known? He felt no doubt that Bilbo knew quite well. It was indeed a kingly gift. But now his thoughts had been carried away from the Dark Mines to Rivendell, to Bilbo, and to Bag End in the days while Bilbo was still there. He wished with all his heart that he was back there, and in those days, mowing the lawn, or pottering among the flowers, and that he had never heard of Moria, or Mithril, or the ring. A deep silence fell. One by one the others fell asleep. Frodo was on guard. As if it were a breath that came in through unseen doors out of deep places, dread came over him. His hands were cold and his brow damp. He listened. All his mind was given to listening and nothing else for 2 slow hours. But he heard no sound, not even the imagined echo of a footfall. His watch was nearly over when, far off where he guessed that the western archway stood, he fancied that he could see 2 pale points of light, almost like luminous eyes. He started. His head had nodded. I must have nearly fallen asleep on guard, he thought. I was on the edge of a dream. He stood up and rubbed his eyes, and remained standing, peering into the dark, until he was relieved by Legolas. When he lay down, he quickly went to sleep. But it seemed to him that the dream went on. He heard whispers, and saw the 2 pale points of light approaching, slowly. He woke and found that the others were speaking softly near him, and that a dim light was falling on his face. High up above the eastern archway, through a shaft near the roof, came a long pale gleam, and across the hall through the northern arch light also glimmered faint and distantly. Frodo sat up.
"Good morning," said Gandalf. "For morning it is again at last. I was right, you see. We are high up on the east side of Moria. Before today is over, we ought to find the great gates and see the waters of Miromere lying in the Dimrill Dale before us."
"I shall be glad," said Gimli. "I've looked on Moria, and it's very great, but it has become dark and dreadful, and we have found no sign of my kindred. I doubt now that Balin ever came here."
After they had breakfasted, Gandalf decided to go on again at once.
"We're tired, but we shall rest better when we are outside," he said. "I think that none of us will wish to spend another night in Moria."
"No, indeed," said Boromir.
"Which way shall we take? Yonder eastward arch?"
"Maybe," said Gandalf. "But I don't know yet exactly where we are. Unless I'm quite astray, I guess that we're above and to the north of the great gates, and it may not be easy to find the right road down to them. The eastern arch will probably prove to be the way that we must take, but before we make up our minds, we ought to look about us. Let us go towards the light in the north door. If we could find a window, it would help, but I fear that the light comes only down deep shafts."
Following his lead, the company passed under the northern arch. They found themselves in a wide corridor. As they went along it, the glimmer grew stronger, and they saw that it came through a doorway on their right. It was high and flat-topped, and the stone door was still upon its hinges, standing half open. Beyond it was a large square chamber. It was dimly lit, but to their eyes, after so long a time in the dark, it seemed dazzlingly bright, and they blinked as they entered. Their feet disturbed a deep dust upon the floor, and stumbled among things lying in the doorway,
whose shapes they could not at first make out. The chamber was lit by a wide shaft high in the further eastern wall. It slanted upwards, and, far above, a small square patch of blue sky could be seen. The light of the shaft fell directly on a table in the middle of the room, a single oblong block, about 2 feet high, upon which was laid a great slab of white stone. "It looks like a tomb," muttered Frodo, and bent forwards with a curious sense of foreboding, to look more closely at it. Gandalf came quickly to his side. On the slab, runes were deeply graven.
"These are Daeron's runes, such as were used of old in Moria," said Gandalf. "Here is written in the tongues of men and dwarves, Balin, son of Fundin, lord of Moria."
"He is dead, then," said Frodo. "I feared it was so." Gimli cast his hood over his face. Chapter 5. The Bridge of Khazad-dûm. The company of the ring stood silent beside the tomb of Balin. Frodo thought of Bilbo and his long friendship with the dwarf, and of Balin's visit to the Shire long ago. In that dusty chamber in the mountains, it seemed 1,000 years ago, and on the other side of the world. At length they stirred and looked up, and began to search for anything that would give them tidings of Balin's fate, or show what had become of his folk. There was another smaller door on the other side of the chamber, under the shaft. By both the doors they could now see that many bones were lying, and among them were broken swords and axe-heads, and cloven shields and helms. Some of the swords were crooked, orc scimitars with blackened blades. There were many recesses cut in the rock of the walls, and in them were large iron-bound chests of wood. All had been broken and plundered, but beside the shattered lid of one there lay the remains of a book. It had been slashed and stabbed and partly burned, and it was so stained with black and other dark marks like old blood that little of it could be read. Gandalf lifted it carefully, but the leaves crackled and broke as he laid it on the slab. He pored over it for some time without speaking. Frodo and Gimli, standing at his side, could see, as he gingerly turned the leaves, that they were written by many different hands, in runes, both of Moria and of Dale, and here and there in Elvish script. At last Gandalf looked up.
"It seems to be a record of the fortunes of Balin's folk," he said. "I guess that it began with their coming to Dimrill Dale nigh on 30 years ago. The pages seem to have numbers referring to the years after their arrival. The top page is marked 1, 3, so at least 2 are missing from the beginning. Listen to this. We drove out orcs from the great gate and guard, I think. The next word is blurred and burned, probably broom. We slew many in the bright, I think, sun in the dale. Floe was killed by an arrow. He slew the great. Then there is a blur followed by Floe under grass near Mirror Mere. The next line or two I cannot read. Then comes We have taken the 21st hall of North End to dwell in. There is, I cannot read what, a shaft is mentioned. Then Balin has set up his seat in the chamber of Mazarbul.
The chamber of records, said Gimli. I guess that is where we now stand.
Well, I can read no more for a long way, said Gandalf, except the word gold and Durin's axe, and something helm. Then Balin is now Lord of Moria. That seems to end a chapter. After some stars another hand begins, and I can see We found true silver, and later the word Well forged, and then something, I have it, Mithril,
and the last 2 lines Owen to seek for the upper armories of Third Deep, something Go westwards, a blur,
to Hollin Gate." Gandalf paused and set a few leaves aside.
"There are several pages of the same sort, rather hastily written and much damaged," he said.
"But I can make little of them in this light. Now there must be a number of leaves missing, because they begin to be numbered 5, the 5th year of the colony, I suppose. Let me see. No, they're too cut and stained. I can't read them. We might do better in the sunlight. Wait, here's something. A large, bold hand, using an elvish script."
"That would be Ori's hand," said Gimli, looking over the wizard's arm. "He could write well and speedily, and often use the elvish characters."
"I fear he had ill tidings to record in a fair hand," said Gandalf. "The first clear word is sorrow, but the rest of the line is lost, unless it ends in estre. Yes, it must be yester, followed by day, being the 10th of November. Balin, Lord of Moria, fell in Dimrill Dale. He went alone to look in Mirrormere. An orc shot him from behind a stone. We slew the orc, but many more, up from east up the Silver Lode. The remainder of the page is so blurred that I can hardly make anything out, but I think I can read, 'We have barred the gates,' and then 'can hold them long if,' and then perhaps 'horrible,' and 'suffer.' Poor Balin, he seems to have kept the title that he took for less than 5 years. I wonder what happened afterwards. But there's no time to puzzle out the last few pages. Here's the last page of all." He paused and sighed.
"It is grim reading," he said. "I fear their end was cruel. Listen. We cannot get out. We cannot get out. They have taken the bridge and second hall. Fra and Loni and Gnarly fell there. Then there are 4 lines smeared, so that I can only read 'went 5 days ago.' The last line runs, 'The pool is up to the wall at Westgate. The watcher in the water took Owen. We cannot get out. The end comes, and then drums. Drums in the deep. I wonder what that means. The last thing written is in a trailing scrawl of elf letters, 'They are coming.' There is nothing more."
Gandalf paused and stood in silent thought.
A sudden dread and a horror of the chamber fell on the company.
"We cannot get out," muttered Gimli. "It was well for us that the pool had sunk a little, and that the watcher was sleeping down at the southern end."
Gandalf raised his head and looked round. "They seem to have made a last stand by both doors," he said, "but there were not many left by that time. So ended the attempt to retake Moria. It was valiant but foolish. The time is not yet come. Now, I fear, we must say farewell to Balin, son of Fundin. He must lie in the halls of his fathers.
We will take this book, the Book of Mazabal, and look at it more closely later. You had better keep it, Gimli, and take it back to Dayan, if you get a chance. It will interest him, though it will grieve him deeply. Come, let us go. The morning is passing."
"Which way shall we go?" asked Boromir.
"Back to the hall," answered Gandalf. "But our visit to this room has not been in vain. I now know where we are. This must be, as Gimli says, the Chamber of Mazabal, and the hall must be the 21st of the North End. Therefore we should leave by the eastern arch of the hall, and bear right and south, and go downwards. The 21st hall should be on the 7th level, that is 6 above the level of the gates. Come now, back to the hall." Gandalf had hardly spoken these words when there came a great noise, a rolling boom that seemed to come from depths far below and to tremble in the stone at their feet. They sprang towards the door in alarm. Doom, doom, it rolled again, as if huge hands were turning the very caverns of Moria into a vast drum. Then there came an echoing blast,
A great horn was blown in the hall, and answering horns and harsh cries were heard further off.
There was a hurrying sound of many feet.
"They are coming!" cried Legolas.
"We cannot get out," said Gimli. "Trapped," cried Gandalf. "Why did I delay? Here we are caught, just as they were before. But I was not here then. We will see what..." Doom, doom, came the drumbeat, and the wall shook.
"Slam the doors and wedge them," shouted Aragorn, "and keep your packs on as long as you can. We may get a chance to cut our way out yet."
"No," said Gandalf, "we must not get shut in. Keep the east door ajar. We will go that way if we get a chance."
Another harsh horn call and shrill cries rang out. Feet were coming down the corridor. There was a ring and clatter as the company drew their swords. Glamdring shone with a pale light, and Sting glinted at the edges. Boromir set his shoulder against the western door.
"Wait a moment. Do not close it yet," said Gandalf.
He sprang forward to Boromir's side and drew himself up to his full height.
"Who comes hither to disturb the rest of Balin, Lord of Moria?" he cried in a loud voice.
There was a rush of hoarse laughter, like the fall of sliding stones into a pit. Amid the clamour a deep voice was raised in command.
"Doom, boom, doom," went the drums in the deep.
With a quick movement, Gandalf stepped before the narrow opening of the door and thrust forward his staff. There was a dazzling flash that lit the chamber and the passage outside. For an instant the wizard looked out. Arrows whined and whistled down the corridor as he sprang back.
"There are many orcs, very many of them," he said, "and some are large and evil, black Uruks of Mordor. For the moment they are hanging back, but there is something else there, a great cave troll, I think, or more than one. There's no way of escape that way."
"And no hope at all if they come at the other door as well," said Boromir.
"There's no sound outside here yet," said Aragorn, who was standing by the eastern door listening. "The passage on this side plunges straight down a stair. It plainly does not lead back towards the hall. But it's no good flying blindly this way with the pursuit just behind. We can't block the door. Its key is gone and the lock is broken, and it opens inwards. We must do something to delay the enemy first."
"We will make them fear the chamber of Mazabul," he said grimly, feeling the edge of his sword, Undúril.
Heavy feet were heard in the corridor. Boromir flung himself against the door and heaved it to. Then he wedged it with broken sword blades and splinters of wood. The company retreated to the other side of the chamber, but they had no chance to fly yet. There was a blow on the door that made it quiver, and then it began to grind slowly open, driving back the wedges. A huge arm and shoulder, with a dark skin of greeny scales, was thrust through the opening gap. Then a great, flat, toeless foot was forced through below. There was a dead silence outside. Boromir leaped forward and hewed at the arm with all his might, but his sword rang, glanced aside, and fell from his shaken hand. The blade was notched. Suddenly, and to his own surprise, Frodo felt a hot wrath blaze up in his heart. "The Shire!" he cried, and springing beside Boromir, he stooped and stabbed with Sting at the hedge's foot. There was a bellow, and the foot jerked back, nearly wrenching Sting from Frodo's arms. Black drops dripped from the blade and smoked on the floor. Boromir hurled himself against the door and slammed it again.
"One for the Shire!" cried Aragorn. "The hobbit's bite is deep. You have a good blade, Frodo, son of Drogo."
There was a crash on the door, followed by crash after crash. Rams and hammers were beating against it. It cracked and staggered back, and the opening grew suddenly wide. Arrows came whistling in, but struck the northern wall and fell harmlessly to the floor. There was a horn blast and a rush of feet, and orcs, one after another, leapt into the chamber. How many there were the company could not count. The affray was sharp, but the orcs were dismayed by the fierceness of the defence. Legolas shot two through the throat. Gimli hewed the legs from under another that had sprung up on Balin's tomb. Boromir and Aragorn slew many. When 13 had fallen, the rest fled shrieking, leaving the defenders unharmed. except for Sam, who had a scratch along the scalp. A quick duck had saved him, and he had felled his orc, a sturdy thrust with his barrow blade. A fire was smouldering in his brown eyes that would have made Ted Sandyman step backwards if he'd seen it. "Now is the time!" cried Gandalf. "Let us go before the troll returns!" But even as they retreated, and before Pippin and Merry had reached the stair outside, a huge orc chieftain, almost man-high, clad in black mail from head to foot, leapt into the chamber. Behind him his followers clustered in the doorway. His broad, flat face was swart. His eyes were like coals, and his tongue was red. He wielded a great spear. With a thrust of his huge hide shield, he turned Boromir's sword and bore him backwards, throwing him to the ground. Diving under Aragorn's blow with the speed of a striking snake, he charged into the company and thrust with his spear straight at Frodo. The blow caught him on the right side, and Frodo was hurled against the wall and pinned. Sam, with a cry, hacked at the spear shaft, and it broke. And even as the orc flung down the truncheon and swept out his scimitar, Andúril came down upon his helm. There was a flash like flame, and the helm burst asunder. The orc fell with cloven head. His followers fled howling as Boromir and Aragorn sprang at them. Doom, doom, went the drums in the deep. The great voice rolled out again. "Now!" shouted Gandalf. "Now is the last chance. Run for it!" Aragorn picked up Frodo where he lay by the wall and made for the stair, pushing Merry and Pippin in front of him. The others followed, but Gimli had to be dragged away by Legolas. In spite of the peril, he lingered by Balin's tomb with his head bowed. Boromir hauled the eastern door to, grinding upon its hinges. It had great iron rings on either side, but could not be fastened. "I'm all right," gasped Frodo. "I can walk. Put me down." Aragorn nearly dropped him in amazement. "I thought you were dead," he cried.
"Not yet," said Gandalf. "But there is time for wonder. Off you go, all of you, down the stairs. Wait a few minutes for me at the bottom. If I don't come soon, go on. Go quickly and choose paths leading right and downwards."
"We can't leave you to hold the doors alone," said Aragorn.
"Do as I say," said Gandalf fiercely. "Swords are no more use here. Go."
The passage was lit by no shaft and was utterly dark. They groped their way down a long flight of steps and then looked back, but they could see nothing except high above them the faint glimmer of the wizard's staff. He seemed to be still, standing on guard by the closed door. Frodo breathed heavily and leaned against Sam, who put his arms about him. They stood peering up the stairs into the darkness. Frodo thought he could hear the voice of Gandalf above, muttering words that ran down the sloping roof with a sighing echo. He could not catch what was said. The walls seemed to be trembling. Every now and again the drum beats throbbed and rolled. Doom, doom. Suddenly at the top of the stairs there was a stab of white light. Then there was a dull rumble and a heavy thud. The drum beats broke out wildly. Doom, boom, doom, boom, and then stopped. Gandalf came flying down the steps and fell to the ground in the midst of the company.
"Well, well, that's over," said the wizard, struggling to his feet. "I've done all that I could, but I've met my match and have nearly been destroyed. But don't stand here. Go on. You'll have to do without light for a while. I'm rather shaken. Go on. Go on. Where are you, Gimli? Come ahead with me. Keep close behind, all of you."
They stumbled after him, wondering what had happened. "Doom, doom," went the drum beats again. They now sounded muffled and far away, but they were following. There was no other sound of pursuit, neither tramp of feet nor any voice. Gandalf took no turns, right or left, for the passage seemed to be going in the direction that he desired. Every now and again it descended a flight of steps, 50 or more, to a lower level. At the moment that was their chief danger, for in the dark they could not see a descent until they came on it and put their feet out into emptiness. Gandalf felt the ground with his staff like a blind man. At the end of an hour they had gone a mile, or maybe a little more, and had descended many flights of stairs, there was still no sound of pursuit. Almost they began to hope that they would escape. At the bottom of the seventh flight, Gandalf halted.
"It's getting hot," he gasped. "We ought to be down at least to the level of the gates now. Soon I think we should look for a left-hand turn to take us east. I hope it's not far. I'm very weary. I must rest here a moment, even if all the orcs ever spawned are after us." Gimli took his arm and helped him down to a seat on the step.
"What happened away up there at the door?" he asked. "Did you meet the beater of the drums?"
"I don't know," answered Gandalf, "but I found myself suddenly faced by something that I've not met before. I could think of nothing to do but to try and put a shutting spell on the door.
I know many, but to do things of that kind rightly requires time, and even then the door can be broken by strength. As I stood there, I could hear hawk voices on the other side. At any moment I thought they would burst it open. I could not hear what was said. They seemed to be talking in their own hideous language. All I caught was kash, which is fire. Then something came into the chamber. I felt it through the door, and the orcs themselves were afraid and silent. I laid hold of the iron ring, and then it perceived me and my spell. What it was I cannot guess, but I have never felt such a challenge. The counterspell was terrible. It nearly broke me. For an instant the door left my control and began to open. I had to speak a word of command. That proved too great a strain. The door burst in pieces. Something dark as a cloud was blocking out all the light inside, and I was thrown backwards down the stairs. All the wall gave way, and the roof of the chamber as well, I think. I'm afraid Balin is buried deep, and maybe something else is buried there too. I cannot say. But at least the passage behind us was completely blocked. Ah, I've never felt so spent. But it's passing. And now what about you, Frodo?
There was not time to say so, but I've never been more delighted in my life than when you spoke. I feared that it was a brave but dead hobbit that Aragorn was carrying.
What about me? Said Frodo. I'm alive and whole, I think. I'm bruised and in pain, but it's not too bad.
Well, said Aragorn, I can only say that hobbits are made of a stuff so tough that I've never met the like of it. Had I known, I would have spoken softer in the Inner Bree. That spear thrust would have skewered a wild boar.
Well, it didn't skewer me, I'm glad to say, said Frodo, though I feel as if I'd been caught between a hammer and an anvil.
He said no more. He found breathing painful.
"You take after Bilbo," said Gandalf. "There's more about you than meets the eye, as I said of him long ago."
Frodo wondered if the remark meant more than it said. They now went on again. Before long Gimli spoke. He had keen eyes in the dark.
"I think," he said, "that there is a light ahead. But it's not daylight. It's red. What can it be?"
"Gosh!" muttered Gandalf.
"I wonder if that is what they meant, that the lower levels are on fire. Still, we can only go on." Soon the light became unmistakable, and could be seen by all. It was flickering and glowing on the walls away down the passage before them. They could now see their way. In front the road sloped down swiftly, and some way ahead there stood a low archway. Through it the glowing light came. The air became very hot. When they came to the arch, Gandalf went through, signing to them to wait. As he stood just beyond the opening, they saw his face lit by a red glow. Quickly he stepped back.
"There is some new devilry here," he said, "devised for our welcome, no doubt. But I know now where we are. We have reached the first deep, the level immediately below the gates. This is the second hall of old Moria, and the gates are near, away beyond the eastern end, on the left, not more than a quarter of a mile. Across the bridge, up a broad stair, along a wide road through the first hall and out. But come and look."
They peered out. Before them was another cavernous hall. It was loftier and far longer than the one in which they had slept. They were near its eastern end. Westward it ran away into darkness. Down the center stalked a double line of towering pillars. They were carved like boles of mighty trees whose boughs upheld the roof with a branching tracery of stone. Their stems were smooth and black, but a red glow was darkly mirrored in their sides. Right across the floor, close to the feet of two huge pillars, a great fissure had opened. Out of it a fierce red light came, and now and again flames licked at the brink and curled about the bases of the columns. Wisps of dark smoke wavered in the hot air.
"If we had come by the main road down from the upper halls, we should have been trapped here," said Gandalf. "Let us hope that the fire now lies between us and pursuit. Come, there's no time to lose."
Even as he spoke, they heard again the pursuing drumbeat, doom, doom, doom. Away beyond the shadows at the western end of the hall there came cries and horn calls, doom, doom. The pillars seemed to tremble and the flames to quiver.
"Now for the last race," said Gandalf. "If the sun is shining outside, we may still escape. After me."
He turned left and sped across the smooth floor of the hall. The distance was greater than it had looked. As they ran, they heard the beat and echo of many hurrying feet behind. A shrill yell went up. They had been seen. There was a ring and a clash of steel. An arrow whistled over Frodo's head. Boromir laughed.
"They did not expect this," he said. "The fire has cut them off. We're on the wrong side."
"Look ahead," called Gandalf. "The bridge is near. It is dangerous and narrow."
Suddenly Frodo saw before him a black chasm. At the end of the hall the floor vanished and fell to an unknown depth. The outer door could only be reached by a slender bridge of stone, without curb or rail, that spanned the chasm with one curving spring of 50 feet. It was an ancient defence of the dwarves against any enemy that might capture the first hall and the outer passages. They could only pass across it in single file. At the brink Gandalf halted, and the others came up in a pack behind.
"Lead the way, Gimli," he said. "Pippin and Merry next. Straight on, and up the stair behind the door."
Arrows fell among them. One struck Frodo and sprang back. Another pierced Gandalf's hat, and stuck there like a black feather. Frodo looked behind. Beyond the fire he saw swarming black figures. There seemed to be hundreds of orcs. They brandished spears and scimitars which shone red as blood in the firelight.
Doom, doom, rolled the drumbeats, growing louder and louder. Doom, doom.
Legolas turned and set an arrow to the string. Though it was a long shot for his small bow, he drew, but his hand fell, and the arrow slipped to the ground. He gave a cry of dismay and fear. Two great trolls appeared. They bore great slabs of stone, and flung them down to serve as gangways over the fire. But it was not the trolls that had filled the elf with terror. The ranks of the orcs had opened, and they crowded away, as if they themselves were afraid. Something was coming up behind them. What it was could not be seen. It was like a great shadow, in the middle of which was a dark form, of man shape, maybe, yet greater, and a power and terror seemed to be in it and to go before it. It came to the edge of the fire, and the light faded as if a cloud had bent over it. Then with a rush it leaped across the fissure. The flames roared up to greet it, and wreathed about it, and a black smoke swirled in the air. Its streaming mane kindled and blazed behind it. In its right hand was a blade like a stabbing tongue of fire. In its left it held a whip of many thongs.
"Hi! Hi!"
wailed Legolas.
"A Balrog! A Balrog is come!"
Gimli stared with wide eyes.
"Durin's bane," he cried, and letting his axe fall, he covered his face. "A Balrog," muttered Gandalf. "Now I understand." He faltered and leaned heavily on his staff. "What an evil fortune, and I am already weary."
The dark figure streaming with fire raced towards them. The orcs yelled and poured over the stone gangways. Then Boromir raised his horn and blew. Loud the challenge rang and bellowed, like the shout of many throats under the cavernous roof.
For a moment the orcs quailed and the fiery shadow halted. Then the echoes died as suddenly as a flame blown out by a dark